Hello and welcome to Power of the Parent, the podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Speak. I'm a level 7 CMI accredited coach, a StrengthsScope master practitioner, mental health first aider and talent consultant. And I'm also the face behind Power of the Parent. In this podcast, I'll be speaking to parents in the workplace. Some of them are in traditionally employed roles, others are running their own businesses, and we're having conversations about life in general, insights about being a parent and having a career, and exploring the strengths that parenting has awoken for people. We will talk about things like the value that they're bringing to the workplace, as well as my guests very generously sharing their personal stories and anecdotes about everything life can throw at us. Hello and welcome to this bonus episode of Power of the Parent, the podcast. Today, I am joined by Katie, who is a friend of a friend. Katie is a parent in the workplace, having crafted a career around everything from business development to process design to relationship building, to name just a few areas of her expertise. Katie is a mum to two girls who she and her husband adopted 3 years ago, and she describes her approach to life as trying to get the balance right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Katie. Have I summed you up there? Is there anything that you'd want to add?
No, I think that's good. I've not really heard it summed up like that before, but no, I think that's pretty spot on, definitely. Getting the balance is mostly what I work on most days, if I'm honest, without even realising it's what I'm doing. So, yeah.
Love it. And I contacted you after I'd seen a post that you'd put on Instagram about the You Can Adopt campaign, because you'd shared some really quite eye-watering numbers on there about how adoption rates have dropped so much. And obviously this is a lot of what you're living, and you are surrounded by this conversation in lots of different ways. But I know that it's still something that, for very obvious reasons, still isn't talked about very publicly in lots of ways. Or there are some like really prolific accounts out there on social media talking about adoption, either from their experience or things like, you know, educating basically around what it is and isn't. But I'm so thrilled that you said that you'd come on and talk, because I think it's a narrative of parenting that I think needs a bigger platform and a bigger stage, as much as we can possibly give it in a, you know, in a boundary-led way. You know that I love a boundary conversation. So I suppose one of my first questions would be, you know, around that campaign, what do you think some of the blockers are that, or do you want to explain a little bit about the campaign and what you know first, and then we'll dive into questions after?
So I guess some of the key things are just around kind of the numbers of children that are in care or need adoption. And I think some of the ones around that recently, there's a stat that's come out that said by 2025, there's going to be 100,000 children in care just in England alone. And like you said, they're eye-watering stats. They are things that kind of take you aback. And I think unless you have been exposed to that kind of side of parenting or children in the care system, or you know somebody that's gone through adoption, or you wouldn't necessarily even think about those sort of numbers. There's no way you'd think of that. And for me, so there's 3,000 kids who are currently waiting for adoption, and over half of those are sibling groups. So I think, as you said earlier, we adopted siblings, and for me, I just couldn't believe how many of them were sibling groups. You can understand why people are more nervous to adopt more than one child, but to have over half of them that are sibling groups is really the thing that kind of shocks me and takes me back. And as you said, it's a campaign that's currently going on with Adoption UK at the moment. It's hashtag We Can Adopt. There's loads more information online if anyone needs to find out about it. So yeah, there's a lot of stats out there. They can be a bit overwhelming, but actually when you start looking into them, it's a really interesting area to start understanding, and I think more people should know about it, which is one of the reasons I wanted to come on and talk to you today, I guess.
Because I suppose, you know, the reality is it's a stat that we're seeing, but they're not statistics, are they? They are children that are sat behind those numbers, and they're, you know, looking for their forever home that is, you know, going to give them everything that they should have had from when they were born. And it's the stories that sit behind it, obviously, are not to be shared publicly, and it isn't some sort of trauma parade at all. But I think sometimes there can be a bit of a disconnect between, well, here are what the numbers look like, but actually you are talking about real humans here, and there's got to be, that's got to be part of it, hasn't it?
Yeah. And I think when we talked about some of the blockers, I think there are myths out there around age, and you have to be a certain age, and once you get past a certain point, you're not going to be even looked at. And I mean, to a degree, whilst there aren't any limits written down anymore, there are going to be questions around your ability. If you're kind of, I don't know, if you're an 80 year old person looking to adopt, there's going to be questions as to whether or not you can actively run around after a 3 year old toddler, etc. But those kind of myths around, actually, you have to be a certain age, you have to come from a certain background, you have to have had a certain amount of experience, are myths, essentially. And yes, there will be questions asked, and you have to go through an extremely rigorous process to find out whether you can go through it. But actually, there's not as many blockers as you might expect that there are, and it's not as daunting as you think it might be, and it's not as scary. I personally found it a little bit like therapy, because when you go through the process, you have to kind of explain a lot of things from your background and experiences that you've had. And yeah, I quite enjoyed going through the process, and I definitely didn't find any blockers from my perspective. I know other people have done, but they have been sort of justified blockers, I think. So just around health and, like I said, those things that are actually going to potentially cause a problem for you parenting a young child in the future. They're kind of, yeah, like I said, justified questions, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And knowing what you know now, well, I mean, I know it's been 3 years since you adopted the girls, but it'll have been, what, 4, maybe 5 years since you kind of started the adoption process.
Yeah.
Did you go into it knowing as much as you possibly could, or kind of were there things that caught you off guard and surprised you? Like how much research goes into it before you make that step to go, right, we're gonna do this, we're gonna start the process? Like where was your head at?
So for this is just for our experience personally. I know different people do it differently. I think if you ask my husband, he would say he didn't do any research into it. He turned up to the information evening. For me, so my godmother is a parent of adopted children. She fostered. She also has birth children. So I'd had quite a lot of exposure to it growing up. So I understood quite a lot around it. However, our first step was, because we're in Yorkshire, there's one adoption. Yorkshire is basically the agency for the whole of Yorkshire now, and they have information evenings on that you can sign up to. So you go on the website and you sign up to a certain date, and you basically go along to kind of an hour's, 2 hour talk about this is the situation, etc. And it's mostly about setting out the basics behind it. Things like most children nowadays are, it's not a relinquished situation like you would have got years ago. Actually, a lot of time they are removed from birth families for significant reasons. There has to be a lot of justification behind removing children from a birth family. So it's that kind of background and the opportunity to ask questions to almost say, okay, now you've got this information, do you still want to go ahead? And then once you've done that, you then essentially fill out a form, and you get social workers will come to your house, and they'll do an initial kind of chat to you, find out a bit more about you, probably about an hour and a half long. And they'll do things like just looking very quickly inside each room, just to kind of say, okay, I can verify you have got 3 bedrooms, or the setup, to make sure that it is a safe environment to start the process, essentially. Mm-hmm. So you kind of find out more as you go along. And I would say personally, my experience of people that I've met is that generally the female in the relationship will tend to do quite a lot more research, and the male will tend to do a little bit less. But obviously there are a lot of same-sex couples that go through the process, etc. So I think you just tend to find one takes the lead and the other one follows a little bit more.
Mm. Okay. And it obviously, so you said there about your godmother, and that's obviously had a big impact and has informed what your kind of view and perspective of it was going to be, and a bit about your experience too. So mm-hmm. is that, I don't know if that's is it quite common for people to have been surrounded by, I suppose, other people's experiences of adoption? Does that, like, how much does that inform your mentality when you're going into it, and what's on your mind?
Trying to think about the people that we met through the process, I think we were probably kind of in the minority of people that knew a little bit more about it. And you could tell as you went through, you go through 2-3 training sessions basically before you go for any further down the process. It's stage one and stage two, they call it. And as you looked around the room, there were definitely people in the room that were hearing things for the first time. And I would say that there were probably more people hearing things for the first time than not. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't know factually, but I would guess that actually we were probably in the minority of having been exposed to it. However, I do know that there are quite a few people who are adopted themselves that then go on to adopt children. So it's not unheard of.
Mm. Okay. I know it's, life isn't this kind of binary experience or anything, but what's been the best thing, if you could sum it up? I mean, you don't have to just pick one, but what's been the, the highlight over the last 3 years?
We had a little one yesterday of a 4-year-old who's really, really struggled with going to school and speech and things like that. She came home yesterday and essentially just started performing her Christmas songs from a concert to us, which sounds like a really tiny thing, but actually she spent most of nursery completely mute and not speaking to anybody. And we've had some challenges, shall we say, getting her settled into school. So the fact that she's now starting to trust the school and the teachers and come home and tell us stuff about the things she's done at school, for me, that's a really, really big achievement that she's at a place where she's comfortable enough now to do that. But I would say just in general, just how resilient they are. And I know everybody says it about children anyway, but how resilient they are with the changes that happen, the fact that they've then had the pandemic and the lockdown and everything. They keep going, and the girls are, they just throw themselves into anything basically and enjoy it. And I think the other thing then is just how much I've learned about me, and how much I've changed. And I'm sure that probably comes with just being a parent in general, of learning about yourself, but actually I've learned how I face into more difficult situations and how to stay calm in other situations. And just a little bit more about what I want to get out of life in general has definitely come from going through this experience.
Is there a point, you just made me think there when you were talking about your little girl and the challenges that she'd had, is there a point where the support and like the social workers take a step back and it's like, we're done here now, the adoption's gone through, or do they, like, does it carry on? Are they there in the background? Like, what's the continuation of support?
I think it differs depending on who your social worker is. We had a very supportive social worker who we got very close to. The children have a social worker, and the family that are, or adults that are looking for children, I never know quite how to word it without being controversial. You have two social workers essentially. So once you're matched and you move in with each other, one of the social workers will step away a little bit and will just do infrequent visits. And then you'll have another one who you'll speak to probably more regularly. I do know other people that have had very regular visits, but I was quite firm with the boundaries on having social workers coming around quite a lot, just because my eldest didn't cope with it very well and she wasn't comfortable with it. So we almost gave them permission to come in when we felt comfortable rather than the other way around. But I do know people who haven't had as much choice of that. And it does very much depend on agency and the social worker that you get.
Right.
You can then, after a certain period of time, I think we were about 2 or 3 months after the girls had moved in, apply for an adoption order to the court, essentially. And depending on if it's contested or if there are any other challenges or questions along the way, it can go through. I think ours went through in as quickly as 4 or 5 months, whereas other people's have taken years to go through. So it very much depends on the situation. And essentially, once that court order's gone through, they will tend to step away a little bit more. And then when you reach 1 year after moving in, the case will get signed off depending on how many things have been ticked off. And you can then access post-adoption support afterwards if you need it. And you basically just ring up and say, this is what's going on. And they will then do an assessment as to whether or not you can get post-adoption support.
You marked that 1 year, didn't you? You had a bit of a celebration when you hit that milestone.
Yeah, so we celebrate every year. We call it our family day. To be honest, it's more to keep the story alive than anything. So the girls have life story books, not the ones provided by social workers because they just weren't great. And I'm actually going on a Zoom call next week with somebody doing a project about them because they are generally not the best for various reasons. Ours had the wrong name of the wrong child in the book and really, really silly mistakes that I just personally wasn't willing to accept. So we have live story books that I've made that essentially tells them an age appropriate way what their life story is, and it goes all the way through from birth to current as soon as I've written it essentially. And then what we'll do is more life story work along the way where we adapt it and change it and add more detail depending on the understanding and the age of the girls. So we do our annual family day really to keep that alive a little bit. Yeah, just to make sure that we're constantly talking about it really without shoving it in their faces, because it's a really hard balance between we want to talk about it because you're special and you've got this special situation versus we don't want them to feel like they're different, or yeah, don't want them to feel uncomfortable about it in any way. It is their life story and it's part of them.
I'm sure that'll be something incredible for them to keep looking back over. And like you say, that age appropriateness of the conversation, it needs to be obviously had with them if that's the decision that you've made as a family, doesn't it? So making sure that you can do that in a way that I suppose is comfortable for you all as well, because that's a lot on, and I know that you'll go into it knowing to an extent, but that is a lot on your shoulders and your husband's shoulders as well to figure out how to share that and how to navigate some of those conversations. Do you get support with any, or did you get any support with that, or is that something that you and he have kind of shaped around how you want to do that and how you want to keep the conversation going with the girls?
So it's talked about a lot in the training that you go through. It is very important that you make sure that they understand their life story, because it is theirs, and essentially this is what they've been through, and it's what they're going to want to understand as they grow older. And we did a lot of training around identity and how in the past, where children haven't been aware of their background, etc., they have struggled because there's been gaps in their story or gaps in their identity. And actually, they've then had an overwhelming feeling that they want to fill those gaps. And obviously, I haven't been through that, so I have no idea what that feels like. All you can do is relate it back to experiences that you've had. And I personally know that I would want to know everything about my life that I could know. For me, that's meant I've turned into a bit of a mini detective, and I've gone on social media, I've done all sorts of things to try and find as much as I can, because I guess unfortunately from the social worker's perspective we didn't get all the information we wanted or needed, and I want to keep filling those gaps as much as I can safely for the girls, so that as they get older and ask questions, I can try and answer as many of them as possible.
That's, yeah, it sounds like an incredible additional role for you as mini detective there as well. And probably could be a full-time job in itself.
Yeah.
So just going back to when you did adopt the girls, what was adoption leave like for you? Did you have an expectation? Like what was your experience like?
My experience from a work point of view was very positive. I was very lucky to be in a flexible enough company where there was a type of adoption policy. I will say that when I came back, I went in and rewrote that policy with HR along with a couple of other people who had adopted, just to say, look, a lot of this is out of date, or actually it's missing some information. like I said, I was supported to go to as many meetings as I needed to, etc. But I know that lots of companies don't understand it and don't necessarily give you the time and the leeway that you need. For instance, you have about 8 appointments that you go to where with a social worker, probably for 1.5 to 2 hours, where you are asked about a subject and then you have to go into detail and they write it all down, etc. And essentially it makes up a big file at the end that then gets submitted to an adoption panel who will either approve you or push it back and ask more questions. I was supported to go to those and just told, just do what you need to do. However, that probably wasn't in line with the official policy. It was more of a line manager who just went, do what you need to do. So I think my experience going into it was very positive. The other thing that I think is important to mention is that generally the person who's not the primary carer will tend to get an equivalent to paternity leave, which is something like 2 weeks. When you're actually matched with a child, you go through at least 2 weeks worth of introductions to them, and they are full days where you are together and they're exhausting. So there's no chance of you doing any work around that. That tends to take up those first 2 weeks, and then you finish your introductions, which is normally in a foster carer's home and a little bit in yours, and bang, you're expected to go straight back to work again. So for my husband, he then took 2 weeks holiday, but it's not a long time to get to know two new children who have just moved into your home. So I think we had a positive experience, but it could have been much better. I'm not sure any companies are quite in the place where they've figured that bit out yet. And then our actual experience was my husband then went back to work for 2 weeks. I had a year off. I toyed with going back after 9 months. Personally, I would have loved to go back after 9 months. I was exhausted and I was ready to have something different to think about. But actually, realistically, for the kids, they needed me to be off for that full year, if not longer. I know people that have taken extra time off on top of that as well. And yeah, that was kind of the hardest thing to get used to, was that adapting from me being the person that went to work every day and then came home and just cracked on with what I wanted to do, to actually I've now got 2 children under the age of 4 and trying to then change back to working mum after that adoption experience was challenging, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, because you're not off, are you? It's just...
No.
You're never off. It's a different type of work, and I know there are lots of different schools of thought on what you describe parenting as. No, it's not, you know, it isn't a paid job, and there's no holiday, and the colleagues are sometimes pretty questionable, and all of those, you know, funny things that we all say, but that's the reality. I think sometimes to describe it as being off can make people think that you just, you know, sat there kicking back, chilling, doing whatever. And the logistics of 1 child, 2 children, however many children you've got, and all meeting all of their needs, and then also helping yourself be at your best, if I, you know, use that cliched phrase, but looking after yourself at the same time, all whilst, can't get my words out, kind of adjusting to this very new life that you've got. And like you say, you kind of go from one day you're coming home as you and you know, see you later, office, to, okay, I'm a parent and I need to get my head in gear around what that means and meeting somebody else's needs. It's a different mental pace, isn't it?
It's a different mental pace. I think I've talked about a lot about identity here because I've done quite a bit of work around it. But before I went off, I had an identity as me. And when I went on adoption leave, I suddenly became mum to 2 children who I'd met a couple of weeks ago for the first time. And I built up that identity over the space of the year and my routine and way of doing things, etc. And then I went back to work and I didn't have an identity. I felt like I'd lost my original one and I couldn't necessarily bring my mum identity into work. I did a little bit, but actually almost had to refigure that out again when I came back. And I'll say it now, even 3 years on, I'm doing some development stuff at the moment that I think I'm only just now getting back to my identity and what that means. And that's not mum, that's not work, that is figuring out who I am, and speaking to other parents, whether they're adopted children or birth children, I feel like that happens quite a lot, and is one of the bigger challenges, I think, of a huge change in your life.
I was reading an article, like a research article, academic thing, journal type thing at the weekend, and it touched very heavily on that, this concept of identity and what our identity is made up of pre-children, and then what changes after we've had children, and that's it's so complex that sometimes I'm not a fan of putting a problem where there isn't, but also we've oversimplified, I think, the conversations that we have with parents, and in particular mums. You know, it's almost like I don't want to set an expectation with somebody that you're going to feel different and you're going to lose your identity. And it's not a box ticking, is it? It isn't like a B follows A situation, because we are nuanced humans, but equally there's going to be change. You don't just, even the smallest of changes for some of us, even if we're, you know, hell bent on, no, my life is sticking as the same, but it does, there are so many shifts in the family dynamic and the way that you spend your days, evenings. Like, I remember just craving a quiet evening when my girls were like quite a bit younger, and even now I'm like, because bedtime is getting a little bit later, and my eldest wants to read in bed, and you're like come on, it's time, yeah, time for bed. You don't want to, I'm not a savor every moment kind of person, because there are some moments I just don't want to savor, but I do want to try and be present for them, even, you know, even the crappy ones. But it is, it completely resonates with me that you say that, with that timeline of getting your identity, or figuring out what your identity is, because they're still dependent on you now, aren't they, at these ages, and probably for a long time, but it does start to shift a little bit, I'm finding. And my youngest is 4, and that's, there's just a little bit more. I think it's been a bit of a shift when she started school.
What I find really hard is I often find myself trying to think of what it's like as an adoptive parent versus a birth parent, and I will never know the difference, and maybe there aren't any differences. The one that I do feel makes my day-to-day slightly different to some of my friends that have got birth children is this kind of forensic thinking around it. And I've spoken to a few other adopters about it, and it's that figuring out, okay, is this happening because she's 4, or is this happening because there's development problems, or there's trauma issues, or we've got emotional challenges, and actually is that just because she's an emotional child, or is it because of some of the experiences she's had? The one difference, I think, especially around school and when they go to school, is yes, you get that time and you get that independence. But I have found the first 2 terms have been me bringing the school up to speed on everything I've figured out over the last couple of years. And I know some children who have challenges going to school, their parents will feel like the advocate for them. But like, I, at one stage, I was getting phone calls every single day from school because there were things that were happening. And I kind of thought, all right, well, 3 years down the line now, they're going to school, I can get back into work a little bit more. But actually, I'm spending an hour a day trying to figure stuff out and trying to help school go, okay, well, maybe if something's happening at lunchtime, it's because she's getting overwhelmed going into a certain environment, or she's scared because she can't see the teacher anymore. And some of these things are challenges that some children will face, but are also things that adopted children regularly face through trauma and attachment issues, and aren't necessarily things that can have a label put on them and be diagnosed. And that, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that I've found, is yes, I want that independence, but actually I still need to be that champion and that advocate, because the girls don't necessarily recognize it themselves and definitely can't explain it. So these emotions that are bubbling over the top and are coming out as behaviours that are undesirable and you don't want them to do are because they're overwhelmed and they just can't handle it. So yeah, I'm not really sure where that came from, but it's a bit of a kind of advocacy piece that I feel you have to do as an adopted parent on their part.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I think it's really important for people that do feel able to share and give that insight, nobody has to in the slightest, but I think it's really helpful. I don't know if that's the right word, but I think this is the kind of conversation that we need to hear, particularly as parents who have got children that they have birthed and had. There might be challenges there, but it's a different experience, and it isn't about comparing. It is about sharing your story, because that I think sometimes is the stuff that helps people and can really stop them in their tracks and think, you know, what could somebody else be going through? And it isn't as we all see the world with our own lens, don't we? When you've got very few intersectionalities, you can see the world very, very straightforward and be kind of shy to some of the privilege that you've got, or the fact that you are able to go through life with very little of these things in your head. And you don't have to, you know, soak up other people's situations to be able to be a nice human, do you? But I think there is a really big awareness piece that we've got to keep having these conversations so that you do support people in the right way.
Yeah, I think that thinking back to when you're talking about adoption leave, I think one of the biggest things is that, particularly from a work point of view, is managers understanding when somebody they manage is going through an adoption process. Mm-hmm. The amount of times I had it referred to as maternity leave, like silly little things like that. And I'm like, it's adoption leave. It's not maternity leave, it's adoption leave. Questions around, oh, well, what's the background then? Can you just kind of, questions that come from curiosity, I completely understand, and I understand those questions are in your head. The question I get all the time is, are they full siblings? Are they birth siblings? And even from a medical professional the other day, she was just being curious and asking it. And for me, I don't necessarily mind answering those types of questions, but I know there are some people who are particularly sensitive about it, and I don't know how the girls will feel about it when they get older either. So you're constantly thinking about, am I saying something that they don't want people to know? In the school playground, questions about things, or talking about, I don't know, breastfeeding or something like that. Somebody said to me, oh, well, would you go through it again? And I just had to kind of bat it away a little bit, because I don't want to outwardly go in and shout about the fact they're adopted, because they might not want people to know that. And that's their story to tell. And yeah, I think that's my biggest thing, that's why I rewrote the policy at work, is I want managers to try and understand what it's like to go through the adoption process. And I also want people to understand that when you come back to work, some of the logistics that you wouldn't necessarily think about with a birth child who's probably 9 months or a year old, that can go to, a nanny or a different type of carer. For us with adopted children, we did not want to send them to any kind of after school care, definitely not one-to-one, because we've spent so long trying to get them to attach to us, and they've obviously been to various different carers in their life. We want them to know that we are their primary carers now. Yeah. So for me, that means a hard stop at 3 o'clock. I have to go and pick them up from school. It's the kind of logistics around that I want people to understand, is it's not a choice. There are some people don't have a choice and they have to send their children to somebody else after school because they have a job that cannot be flexible. But if you've got flexibility, you should absolutely support as much as you can, because you don't know what the situation is in that family.
I think that's incredibly insightful, and thank you again for sharing all of these aspects. And I think there's so much that the world needs to hear from you, and not just it's not on your shoulders, obviously, but from you and parents like you who are able and willing to kind of share their story and their narratives, because this is, I know that there will be so many people listening, and I'm learning as you're talking as well. I know that there will be so many people listening that are like, oh, I didn't know that, and I need to think about that. And so thank you so much. I'd really love to end on, so obviously taking into account that we are all very different and we don't kind of want to dish out unsolicited advice to anybody, but if somebody's listening and they've got a friend or a family member going through the adoption process, are there any things that you would encourage them to say? Because we're kind of getting to the stage where we know what we shouldn't be saying. Yeah. If we didn't know before, you know, it, something as basic as adoption leave is not the same as maternity leave, for example. I hope that there aren't any line managers listening going, oh gosh, I've said that before. If you are, then don't ever say it again. But from a personal perspective, is there anything that you would recommend that people could say that would bring some comfort? Or
yeah, I think whilst I've said there are certain questions that might trigger people, my approach to things is to always be curious. So ask the questions, but just be a bit mindful of the way that you're asking them. And to be honest, if you ask a question in the right way, I don't think there's going to be many people that will get frustrated about that. I think ask the questions, but kind of say, look, I don't know anything about this. The same way that I would ask a question to somebody that I didn't know anything about. Just think about the way that you're asking it. I think try and use it to learn about adoption, children in care, foster children. There are so many different variants on it. Even I'm nervous about saying the wrong thing in the wrong way. Understand trauma, because I think trauma affects so many of the children that are in the care system, and don't necessarily think of it as trauma in the kind of traditional way that you might have been taught about it. Actually, just being, or not even just, being removed from a birth parent is a trauma in itself. And actually, as a, people go, oh, well, they were a baby, they don't remember. It doesn't matter. Your brain is developing, and actually it can probably affect a baby way more in some ways than it does a three-year-old in other ways. So there are different ways that trauma can affect you. Don't have too high expectations. Respect that family are going to need space. They're going to need to get to know each other. All the social workers will be telling them to keep to themselves. Don't expand your network too big. Do it gradually. We had 2 weeks where we just didn't see any family at all. And yes, we had grandparents that were itching to come and meet the children and couldn't wait, but we had to hold them back. And actually, because we did it slower, we found that our attachment with the girls was a lot stronger. And therefore, when we then did introduce other people, they attached to them a lot stronger as well. It's not keeping people at bay to be annoying. It is going through a process that has been tried and tested over a number of years to do it in the best way possible. And then my other thing is just around things like Christmas and birthdays and stuff like that. So what is it, 29th of or 30th of November, we are already starting to see dysregulation in our family. And that isn't necessarily because of anything in particular. So it's not something that's happened and therefore we've got dysregulated emotions. It is things like routine at school has slightly changed. We're learning songs. We know that parents are going to be coming into school. It snowed. That's different. We haven't had snow recently. We've got birthdays coming up, and those kind of overwhelming feelings that the kids get are happen every year. And you every year you go, oh, maybe it won't be quite as bad this year. And then end of November, you start to see the telltale signs. So yeah, just anything that's big like that, that you may expect a child to be really, really overexcited by, if they've been through trauma, it doesn't happen for all children, and I can't speak for everyone, but my experience is year after year, they tend to get the same sort of feelings and they can't necessarily articulate why. So this time of year might be particularly hard for children in adoptive families and for their parents who are trying to co-regulate them as much as possible.
I will be thinking of you over the next couple of weeks. Well, the next month, really. That was one of the first conversations that you and I had when we first met two years ago. So, and I do very often think of you in December, well, end of November, December. So I hope that it's as smooth as possible for you and the girls over the next few weeks. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. It's been incredible. And I think the more we can share and use whatever platforms we have, the better, because it is kids behind those stats, and there's got to be more of a conversation about it and dispelling all these myths. So thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thank you. If anyone's got any questions or wants to know more, I am by no means an expert. I've purely lived it and experienced it, but if anybody wants to know anything, whether it's from an adoption point of view directly or just being known to somebody or managing somebody that's going through the process, I'm more than happy to help.
Thank you so much. I think in the interest of confidentiality, the best way to do that is to either send a question to me to the Power of the Parent email address and I will send it on to Katie, or that when this post is live on Instagram and LinkedIn, if you are seeing it, you can pop a question in the comments there and Katie will see them and we'll get a response to you. I think that's probably the best way to do it, so I don't have to give out anybody's contact details. Thank you so much, Katie, for that incredibly kind offer and just a brilliant chat this morning. Thank you.
No worries, thank you.
Thanks very much for tuning in to Power of the Parent, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate, review and subscribe. And if you could tell all your friends about the podcast, that would be wonderful. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find me on Instagram. Just search Power of the Parent. See you next time.